Hey everybody, just a small production note before we begin. One of our cast members was remote this week, calling in to the show from his phone, so there's a few minor hiccups regarding the audio on his particular device, but other than that, it ended up being a good episode, so we decided to keep it anyway. So enjoy. Okay, everybody, welcome to the show. Neil, how's it going this week?
Oh, you know, it's quieting down after the family reunion. It was a good time, but exhausting. I like being an uncle, but, you know, I've got my two actual nieces, and then we counted it out. At this particular reunion, we had 13 kids in that generation present, and I was kind of running uncle duty for all of them, which meant a lot of carrying kayaks. Pushing because they don't know how to paddle stuff.
Yeah, okay.
And kind of wiped out, honestly.
I bet you're tired, but you're satisfied.
That's probably a good way to put it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I know for me personally, like some of the weeks that I'm like really not looking forward to because I'm gonna be really busy. I get to the end of the week and I realize I'm in a really good mood for some reason. It's probably because I was busy and I wasn't like stuck indoors playing video games. Anyway, well, that sounds good. How many kids total, you said?
There's 15 in that generation.
Mm-hmm.
13 were present.
Okay. That's a lot. Gideon, you have kind of a big family, right? I mean, you're like one of five?
Yeah, I'm one of five siblings. But all my extended family is like states away and I don't really know them. Like my mom's side is like in South Dakota and then my dad's side is like East Coast, like Connecticut and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. New England, as they say.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess I have an aunt that lives in Florida. So.
Okay. Okay. Kind of all around then.
Yeah.
So I guess my personal lore is that I of course have one younger brother, but my mom is the youngest of 11.
Damn.
So big family. So in terms of like cousins, like when the Ziegenhorn and the Anson side had like a family reunion, holy cow, like you know, we had to like rent basically a small town to get like to have a family reunion. I mean, it just tons and tons and tons of people. So and the Straight Jack side is very moderately sized though, so that kind of makes up for things anyway. You're doing good this week?
Yeah.
Gideon? Okay.
Yeah, I'm doing good. Man, I feel like I hit a wall in Elden Ring for a while. Not so much like a boss or anything, but I was just like really confused at where to go. So I looked up things here and there on like Fetch to Life or small YouTube guides. And so I made it to whatever that plateau is, the Altus or plateau. It's like a fall area. Really cool. Yeah. So I've been making good progress on that. Getting close to being done with My Name is Earl. Having a lot of fun with that show, honestly. Because I really like early 2000s, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to get back to Pentiment because I've been thinking about that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Doing good. I can't complain.
I think I'll try to get that podcast organized for talking about the first third of the game and see who wants to jump on that. Because I keep forgetting.
That's okay. I mean, you just had the move and everything, so.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe we'll try to get something. We'll talk about it this weekend, I'm sure. And who was the last major boss you killed in Elden Ring?
I guess it was Radahn, technically.
Radahn, okay.
I've killed some random like dungeon bosses and things like that.
Yeah, the same five cat statue enemies that are in like the end of every single dungeon in that game. Yeah.
Okay. I killed like that in that like Radahn arena. There's like a cave at one of the walls. I killed that big like tree snake monster, whatever the hell.
Okay.
Cool. I don't remember what it's called.
Okay, like a minor air tree, sounds like it.
I don't know. It was like It was in a dungeon. It was a huge like snake, tree thing. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, describing from software bosses can sometimes be like, it's like describing a fever dream you had. It's like, no, it was a guy who was half horse and half man, and then he pulled a sword out. It was like, what? Yeah. All this crazy music started happening. Yeah. So anyway. Okay, good. And okay, everything's good with you guys. Well, we are here to talk about the movie High Fidelity. It came out in 2000. John Cusack, Jack Black's first big movie. Lisa Bonet's in this movie. Not a lot of other huge names. Joan Cusack is in it. So I guess I don't have to. We kind of pulled this one out as we had other plans, but we needed to throw an audible at the last minute. We were going to do Beau's Afraid, but you know, it was like one day we threw an audible. We didn't want to do a 3-hour movie.
No.
So I think that's somewhat understandable. And I think this is like fairly light, and I would not describe Beau's Afraid in that same way.
No.
So we wanted to, something quick to throw together. Neil and I have seen this movie before, but Gideon has not. So I'll give you a brief introduction. I was given this movie by somebody I worked with, and I was an intern at Mud Advertising in the spring of, would have been 2016 or somewhere around there, and had an internship and got to know this guy. I was always talking about music, always talking about records and classic rock and vinyl and stuff like that. And he was like, you would really like this movie. And of course, like, he knew like who I was personality wise and, you know, we talked about like, oh, me going on dates in college and whatever, and things not working out. So he gave me this movie very specifically, and I kept it, and I didn't watch it for years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I didn't watch it until like I had moved up to St. Cloud and moved to Minnesota, and like on a random whim, like popped it in the DVD player, and then it instantly became one of my favorite movies. So he really nailed it on recommending this one. So I always recommend it to people who are like either really into music,
mm-hmm.
Or really into like, I think, a very funny, sensitive romantic comedy, and one that is not afraid to expose its writer or creator as like being a little bit of a douchebag, right? I respect its boldness in its ability to not make you not like its main character. So obviously, like, I really like this movie. I would say Neil likes this movie less than I do. So let's get him first, and then we'll go to Gideon, who's the complete neophyte on this one. Oh no, Neil, where'd you go?
Are you with us, Neil?
Yeah. So this was a rough rewatch for me. Oh, you guys hear me?
Yeah, you're good. Yep.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Yeah, this was a rough rewatch for me. Honestly, I think I changed it over to like the 1.25 speed just to get through it again. I'm glad that you like acknowledge that Rob's character is not a likable protagonist. I think if we had to fight about that, then this podcast would devolve into something. You know, we joke around that sometimes I'm the guy who, you know, roots for the villain, and I can't root for Rob. I just don't like enough to support in any meaningful way. I think in one of our early episodes, we kind of talked about like tropes in movies that we don't like. And this one runs into it's not necessarily a trope, but it's like a writing issue that really irks me, is like the couple in a relationship and you don't know why they're together. We kind of ran into that with Midnight in Paris, where I forgot the actress's name, but Owen Wilson's fiance, who's just like
Rachel McAdams,
like, yeah. She's just awful, and you don't understand why Owen Wilson's in the first place. And this one kind of runs into the same thing with John Cusack and his girlfriend, who like he's pining after her, and that's fine. But like, again, I don't understand what like the basis of their relationship is, at least for a good chunk of the movie. I think it's kind of explained when he later goes to her father's funeral.
Mm-hmm. But
I'm not invested in their relationship, and so all of his actions in relation to it just are kind of hollow, and like, yeah. I think like amplify his douchey behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I certainly understand that take. This time, I would say definitely this time watching it was kind of the first time I started to take everybody else's side in this movie a little bit more over Rob, and acknowledge that like Rob is acting like a total turd, or like Rob has some issues that he needs to work out. But eventually he does. I mean, like, he does have like a somewhat redemptive arc in this movie. Although I think you're right that we don't get like a whole lot of the romance between him and what's his girlfriend's name in this movie?
Laura.
Laura, right.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's like he was DJing at a club and they met, and now they're in like, they kind of just like mention it as like how they met or whatever. And I think they really mention it to like, they mention that they met DJing to set up the other, I mean, we're getting like way ahead of ourselves here, but they're doing that to set up how he meets the girl towards the end of the movie that he catches himself falling in love with, and then he stops. Like, I think that's the only reason that they really introduced that backstory between him and Laura. Otherwise, I don't think it's really that important to like the main thrust of the plot going on here. But we can get into that in a little bit. Gideon, give me your top level thoughts. Please do not tell me you don't like this movie.
Oh man, okay. I wanted to like this movie.
Oh no.
I mean, I love talking about movies and games and music with you and mm-hmm. other people. It's awesome when you can be so enthusiastic about it and passionate about it and just like really dig into those kinds of hobbies. And this like reminded me of all the insufferable, horrible people I've met that you can find in those hobbies.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, I do appreciate you acknowledging it, but it's like, man, the character, like almost straight from the get-go, was so annoyingly insufferable to me. And I was like, god damn, this is gonna be pulling teeth just getting through this. So I mean, you know, I don't want to totally shit on the movie and everything, and I'll get more to my grievances later, but yeah, I was just like, god, this guy fucking sucks, and I don't give a shit about what he wants. And I feel like I've had people in my life where they just like, oh, woe is me. I'm like, what's wrong? And it's like the most trivial shit ever. I'm like, give me a fucking break, man.
Like, okay, so the main thrust of why you both don't like this movie is that you don't like Rob. Is that
the character is so annoying to me. He's like one of the most annoying movie characters I feel like I've seen in a while, that he poisons the well, drags it all down for me, and it's like hard for me to like even try to enjoy the other elements, I guess, as much.
Yeah, I think for me, like, he oversteps the mark as far, like, there's a concept of, like, the lovable asshole. And I think he, like, goes too far into the asshole territory and doesn't stay in the lovable part. Like, there are moments that I recognize as meant to be humorous, and in like a slightly different variation could be. Like the one that springs to mind is, so over the course of the movie, he's trying to figure out why he and Laura didn't work out, and he revisits a bunch of his past girlfriends, and I forget her name, but he goes back to like his like 16-year-old high school girlfriend, and she reveals that, you know, it's revealed that she was like a very like traditional Christian girl, so she wasn't going to have sex with him, and that like disappointed him so badly that he broke up with her, and so she like put herself in a position with her next boyfriend where she got like sexually assaulted or raped.
Yeah, like borderline sounded like. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, well, that's great. Like,
yeah.
It wasn't his fault that they broke up. She was totally into him. She just wasn't willing to have sex with him.
Right.
Yeah. And with that stuff, it's like, I guess this kind of like a dark comedy with some of those things, but it's like that comedy, and I love that stuff, but it's just not even landing, and just it's like ammunition for me to like hate the character more and more. They're like, let me give you another reason. Another. I'm like, what are we doing here? So
Rob's like my well of like, you know, lovable asshole. It's like already not there, and he's just like made it worse. Like he's drawing on credit that he doesn't have.
Okay. Okay, I can see that. I definitely this time I was watching it, I definitely started to pick up a lot more on the like, oh, Rob is a dick kind of thing. But I think like that's very intentional, like by the filmmaker, right? So that because he like Rob realizes like, okay, perhaps far too late into the movie and far too late into the course of his life that he is the problem. Right. Like the Dylan line says, I know now traps are only set by me. But I think that's like the point the movie is trying to make. So like I'm not saying your guys take as invalid. If he's unlikable, he is unlikable. And if that's a problem, that's a problem for you guys. But for me, it never bothered me as much because he does end up having that like redemptive thing. And like, I can be honest with myself enough to say that, like, I see so many of my own negative tendencies in Rob that, like, when he was doing, like, comically asshole shit like that, I just laughed because I understood the instant. Because, like, it rung true with me on the inside where I was like, that's funny to me because I've had that exact same thought where I learned that, you know, like, somebody broke up with me for some reason that wasn't related to me, but it was like it was bad, like something bad happened, but at least it wasn't my fault, and I was like, thank God. So I totally relate to that, and I totally understand kind of Rob's instinct there, even if it is like a little overblown for the, you know, the movie version is a very like comic book version of that thing. And in what reality is John Cusack sleeping with like Lisa Bonet and Catherine Zeta-Jones, and like every woman in this movie is like smoking hot and way out of Rob's league.
Yeah. And even him talking about that too. And like when he explained how he got Lisa and then she just kind of shockingly wasn't in the movie anymore. Right. Like that's it. They literally go their separate ways. Yeah, I don't know. I had something else, but I forgot.
Go ahead, Neil.
So one thought I had was, even before we decided to revisit this movie as sort of a Band-Aid episode, I was thinking about suggesting Ferris Bueller's Day Off at some point in the future. And then in rewatching this, I was like, oh man, this is just a douchier Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Can I confess something to you, Neil?
What?
I hate the movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh.
I do not like that movie at all, except for Cameron. Is that his name? Because he wears a Gordie Howe jersey. I think that's kind of cool. I've never understood the appeal of Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Cameron's the best part of that movie for sure.
Yeah, he's super funny. We can revisit it at a later. Maybe I'll feel different about it if I watch it. Okay, so let's talk about some positives on this movie. I would say a universal positive, I think we can all agree on. This is the first movie where Jack Black ever got to play Jack Black.
Mm-hmm.
You guys like his performance in this? I mean, I know it seems kind of tired and routine now because in this movie his character is just Jack Black. But like we had never seen that before this movie had come out. And I think he's like one of he's the funniest part of this movie. Like every when he does the little dance to Walking on Sunshine in the very beginning, it's hysterical. And it's not as shocking of a moment now because we all know that Jack Black can sing, but like the big joke of this movie is that like Rob doesn't want him to put his band to play at the show. And we all, just by looking at Jack Black, we think this guy's going to be horrible. And then it turns out he's really good. I mean, that is like, that's kind of lost on modern audiences, I think. Yeah. But like, that was supposed to be the big payoff of the end of this movie.
No, I'm glad you said that, because I guess I was having trouble viewing it from the context of 2000, and I didn't know it was his, you said, first role or like breakout role.
Yeah.
So I did feel like it was kind of tired, maybe a little obnoxious at times. He was also kind of a jerk. I feel like their other friend, Dick, was like my favorite character. I wanted to know more what's going on in his life. But, and yeah, and I like Jack Black and everything, but I just thought he was also just kind of an annoying, I mean, he's like screaming at like the dad trying to buy his daughter like a present for her birthday.
There's no way your daughter likes that song. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. But it was good to see him. And this might be controversial, like you had mentioned, what was that movie you said? Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Yeah. I'm not big on School of Rock, and this feels like he just took this character and is that character in a couple of years in School of Rock.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think School of Rock is all that either. It's like,
I just think it's overrated.
It's super overrated. One of my favorite smaller Jack Black moments in this is when Rob comes out after having like talking to Laura about her dad dying or whatever, and he's like asking a totally inappropriate question. He's like, Rob, top five musical crimes committed by Stevie Wonder in the 1990s. Sub question, is it better to burn out or to fade away? Like, just the way he says that, like, really cracks me up every time. The way sometimes that like characters will interject in totally inappropriate conversations with random music trivia cracks me up. Like,
yeah,
when Laura says something, she's like, well, Marvin Gaye and Art Garfunkel make albums like this all the time, and Rob's like, made his dad shot him in the 90s or like whatever. Like,
yeah, that was funny.
That shit really makes me laugh in this movie. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
No, you're good. Yeah, I did like the almost like Where's Waldo of musical references, especially if you're any kind of music fan, you can totally appreciate that. And I felt like there was plenty I got and plenty I missed. I also liked hearing them talk about Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
I'm like, I have yet to see it yet, and I really want to, but I just haven't got to it yet.
Like, that conversation is another great example of, like, I don't think I've ever had that conversation with somebody, but like that sense of like you get a text from a girl and you're like way over analyzing every single word to try to decipher like what's going on here. And I haven't seen Evil Dead 2 yet. Like, it's just, I don't know, it's very relatable on some of like their I think if you think Woody Allen movies are annoying, this is another movie that you would find annoying, because the sense of humor is derived from the exact same place. It's like, I'm neurotic, here's a character that's neurotic, right? So you just get to like sit there and relate to the character. It's like, oh, isn't it funny how neurotic and Jewish they are? It's like watching Seinfeld, right? It's like, it's the same kind of appeal. Neil, thoughts on Jack Black? Uh-oh, did we lose Neil? Some sort of weird delay going on.
That's okay.
That's okay.
No, I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Jack Black is fine. I would actually say the breakout performance here is Tim Robinson. I think he kind of steals the show.
For like is he Ian?
No, he's the upstairs neighbor who Laura briefly hooks up with, and I think I've only, to my knowledge, seen him in this and The Shawshank Redemption, and comparing the characters of Andy Dufresne to Ian is a heck of a juxtaposition.
Honestly.
Yeah, I didn't even recognize that as Tim Robinson. Yeah, go ahead.
Wow.
No, one other thing I just kind of wanted to make note of is John Cusack really reminds me throughout this movie of a poker player named Phil Hellmuth, who is like arguably one of the greatest poker players of all time. He's but also is like a total man child. Gideon, you're nodding along. Do you know him at all?
No, the name sounds familiar. What was it one more time?
Phil Omius. But it even comes down to this point where so Phil Helmuth at the poker table has this like very like he tries to put on like a tough bad boy persona down to wearing a leather jacket. Much like John Cusack's character. And while John Cusack is an actor and has like a wardrobe department to help him find something that fits, Phil Helmuth does not.
I'm looking at pictures of him now.
But, yeah, I don't know that I have much more to say about it. Again, like, there's a lot of times where I understand what they're going for, and it just doesn't hit the mark for me. One question I have for you guys is, so I think we can all agree that Rob is not a particularly likable protagonist. But I think sort of parallel to that is that I also wasn't particularly interested in Laura as a character. I don't know that she's got a lot going for her as far as just the way she's written. And I wanted your guys' perception on that. I just don't remember her being engaging.
I think that the movie is ultimately about Rob's narcissism, and I don't think that it is really... Like, I know that it is about Laura and Rob's relationship, but really it's about Rob. And I think that them not going into a ton of detail or a ton of effort to make you really like Laura is kind of aside the point. Now, like, you can... You can say that, hey, I wish they went in this different direction. I think that's like totally valid. I just think that like it's all about like Rob's inner monologue.
No, that's an interesting take, and I hadn't really considered it that way.
But... Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. But I mean, I think she's fine. I think they're a good match for each other with like as little as we know about Rob in this movie. Or as little as we know about Laura. I do my favorite scene in the whole movie is when they talk in the bar at the end. I think that scene is so sweet and so sensitive and such a like something that the writer so obviously went through and came to like a really profound conclusion about it. Like when if you guys know the scene I'm talking about, right, where he's like, there's all the fantasy girls and I don't have to see their dirty underwear on the floor in the fantasy. Right. And I'm tired of the fantasy and I want something real and all that. I just think that is such a sweet, nice, I think that's a very romantic scene for me personally, but no, I understand what you're saying about Laura. I think maybe there's some deleted scenes from this movie. It's already like a little bit long. I mean, it's just over 2 hours, which is kind of unusual for like a romantic comedy like this. I don't know, Gideon, did you have any thoughts about Laura?
I guess there was some things that I was a bit confused on with like them even kind of trying to both get back together with like it seemed like they had both cheated on each other, and maybe they're one of those couples where that's like not a big deal. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, it was revealed he had cheated on her when she was pregnant. Granted, he didn't know she was pregnant at the time. But then, like, they use the word sleeping together, and he, like, she says sleeping together is, like, good with that Ian guy, but they hadn't had sex yet. But then I think later they use that same terminology, and it meant, like, sex had happened. So I was just getting a little confused on what they meant at times with some of that, and even why why that wasn't such a big deal for them, that, like, that the other person, or they had both cheated, I guess. As far as her character goes, I mean, it was a little strange. She was like a lawyer, I guess. She seemed like a lawyer, and it could have been like, you know, it's more his POV than hers, but she seemed like the most, like she had the most free time or PTO like ever. Didn't really seem like she was doing too much with the lawyer stuff.
Yeah.
And her being at like a club like that is just kind of funny, but like, what do I know? You know, maybe there's plenty of lawyers that get down at the club like that.
I mean, she's kind of multifaceted in that aspect, right? Mm-hmm. She was like out at the club during his DJ days, and then she decided to like become a lawyer and like become really successful, and mm-hmm. her life was taking off and his wasn't. So she was just like sick of him not being serious. I mean, like, he's basically still,
yeah, he's
17, 18. He's the same, and everybody else around him is changing. So, yeah, that's a very like that. That's like such a real thing that I feel like modern couples run into, especially with that particular gender dynamic. I feel like women are ready to like, okay, let's go, let's grow up, let's settle down, let's have some kids, and guys are like pulled kicking and screaming into the future. A lot of the time, I think, and this movie is from 25 years ago. I'm sure it's only gotten worse. So,
mm-hmm.
Anything else you guys want to touch on? Like, I don't want to hold you guys here. If it was just like, hey, this movie sucks and I hate this guy. You know, there's only so many ways you can say it.
No, you're good. I did appreciate the soundtrack. There's some good songs. I was wondering. I'm guessing not, since you'd seen it a couple of years ago, it sounded like, but this didn't introduce you to Bob Dylan, right?
No, but it did introduce me to that song.
Yeah, same.
That song kicks ass.
Yeah, that song was good. I like that.
Really, really good album.
And Jack Black handing that guy the blonde on blonde.
Yep.
Right, that was cool.
Yep.
One other quick thing about Laura, her character led to one of my favorite jokes of the movie, which is when she just like calls the stores like, my dad died. And then Jack Black is like, that's a drag. Whatever.
Bummer.
Yeah, that was great. I really liked that. That was funny.
Top five songs about death in honor of Laura's death.
Yeah, and it's like, oh my God, dude.
Dude, I love when they're like feeling kind of basic. Top five, track one, side ones. And he's like, smells like Teen Spirit off of Nevermind. And Jack Black's like, oh no, Rob, that's not obvious at all. How about Beethoven? You know, how about
right, right. Hmm. And I do like it is, it does kind of shine a light, and you can kind of laugh at yourself with like, I definitely have been to people like, oh yeah, Radiohead, OK Computer, 1997 or whatever, like track two, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, these people are going to think I'm such a dork. Like, so I appreciated it for that. And I guess like the way you talking about it, I do like how it's like, yeah, like there are, it kind of gives you a day in the life of, yeah, maybe that guy that works at the failing record store and
right.
clearly is not worried about his failing record store and something else is going on.
Have you guys seen Juno?
I have, a long time ago.
Neil, you have?
Yeah.
Rob really reminds me of Jason Bateman's character in Juno.
Remind me who that is.
He's the guy from Arrested Development. He's married to Jennifer Gardner in Juno. He's the one that is like really hesitant about like having a family and having kids and like wanting to settle down.
Is he the one that's like gonna foster Juno's baby or whatever?
Yeah,
okay. Yeah.
Right.
I gotcha. Yeah.
I think there's a lot of similarities between those two movies and particularly those two characters. Like I think that the two writers were probably in a very similar place. You know, it's another like oddly sort of a similar movie is I wouldn't say it's a similar movie, but it's similar themes is like Eraserhead in that same way. It's like a different artist's interpretation of like some of the same themes of like fear of commitment and fear of settling down and all that sort of thing. Neil, any favorite scenes, any particular standout moments, the end credits even?
Like I said, I think Tim Robinson steals the screen when he's there. And I think he's like, I don't wish there was more of him. I think he's in the movie for like precisely the amount of time that like mm-hmm. the of his character is amusing, and then like any more and it would have been a little grating. But
Wait, what about the scene where they all pretend like they're gonna beat up, like in their fantasy they beat up Ian?
No, I was gonna say like the three guys in the record shop, like I do enjoy like the bro banter.
Yeah.
One other thing I'll say is that, like, Sam, if you'd been born 20 years earlier, I can, like, Rob's apartment is, like, the quintessential, like, Sam man caves. Just, you know, minus the Sega Dreamcast and instead just going for the huge vinyl collection.
Yeah. Yeah, me and Rob have a lot of similarities. Let's just put it that way. Anyway, moving on. it's a little painful, but let's just be bold about that. Okay.
That's okay.
Well, if we're out of things to say, how about we move on to ratings and we'll get out of here early. I gotta go play some Dead Space.
Sure, no worries. You want to go first?
Yeah, you know, I think you guys have talked me into giving it a 4. I think this movie has some problems. I think it's like maybe a little bit overly long for what it is. And of course there's always the, like, you know, for a 5, you got to leave room for the 5s, like we always say. That said, while I find individual people in this movie grating and annoying, I would also be lying if I didn't say, like, I really want to hang out on a Saturday in the record store with those guys, like with that crew. I think, like, I want those guys to be my friends. I want to hang out in Championship Vinyl. I want to go to Lisa Bonet's show. You know, and I think the movie's very sweet and sensitive by the end. I think it's like very insightful about, like, the kind of neurotic men that it's talking about, that the movie is about. So, and you know, I just think it's fucking super funny. Like, there are so many, like, to me, there's just so many laugh out loud moments in this, and, you know, it's like, you can't pick what makes you laugh, but this is one of those movies that just unequivocally makes me laugh. I think it's super funny, but I can acknowledge that I am biased because I relate so heavily to it, but I don't necessarily think that that is invalid. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, am I going to be accused of enjoying the movie because I relate strongly to the characters? Well, you know, guilty as charged, you know. I guess that's just how it's gonna have to be. So yeah, I'll settle on like a strong 4. I don't know. Like, I almost went into this saying, like, I can't imagine anybody not liking this movie, but you know, I would love to see, like, what Alex Princeton, I was really trying to get him on this show, but he couldn't do it. I would love to see what Alex Princeton thinks of this
same movie.
Gideon, I want to hear your take before I give mine, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
Uh-oh.
So I think this is in a similar way to kind of how I felt with High Plains Drifter, where, like, knee-jerk, I didn't really like it. The character kind of offended me with their actions, and I just, you know, kind of felt negative towards that character, and thus most of the movie, or most of the parts of the movie, whatever. But upon hearing, like, your opinion on it and, like, kind of how you can relate to it and what it means and different things like that, just coming at that different angle, I really appreciate hearing that, because I'd seen, like, this is pretty favorable and stuff online, like at least a 7.5 for most people, yeah. 3.54.
What's the Rotten Tomatoes on this movie? It's probably pretty high.
It's high. I think it's like 91 or something. But, like, from the context of, like, I guess today, and not having any kind of nostalgia or anything, my knee-jerk reaction is like a 1-star. Like, I know there's way worse movies, but it just, like, annoyed and irked me so much, so constantly, with just him, the character.
Go ahead.
You're fine. So it just didn't really click with me in that way, and I was ready to embrace it, I was ready to like it, and I just couldn't. Even like Jack Black couldn't save it for me and different stuff like that. But I think part of that, sometimes it, you know, with movies, it could be like the time that it was, like the year it was made in, and maybe not aging as gracefully as other things. But I do think maybe I could come to like this more with time. I've kind of, as I've gotten older, I feel like maybe not to be as totally dismissive with some things, and maybe I can like appreciate it more on a rewatch with stuff. But knee jerk reaction, it was a one, and it just annoyed me a lot.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Well, what is it like? I mean, both of you can tell me, what is it like to be like totally whole human beings and not be broken inside in a way that fundamentally makes you enjoy this movie more?
I mean, I was going to say, like, I have my own version of neuroticism that's not synced up with this movie's version.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I'm actually shocked that Gideon's going to rate this lower than I am. I think I have to give it the most like begrudging three. Like
that's acceptable.
Like I want to give it a two. Like that's my gut reaction, but just like there's some things to consider in this movie that like even if I don't like them, I think Sam, you pointing out that like the movie like goes out of its way to intentionally make Rob not likable is interesting. And so like if I were to rate this movie based on like pure enjoyment for myself, I think it would be a two. But I think that there are, again, like outside of how it's executed, I think the ideas are interesting enough to make it a worthwhile watch for anybody. And then they can, and I want to give it a three sort of as like, I think anybody could watch this movie and it really is going to come down to like the individual, whether they're going to give it a two or a four. I don't think it's bad enough to be a one. And it's certainly not a five for me, but I can see how somebody approaching this movie could go either way. And so I kind of end up with two, but like in a more objective sense, removing my personal feelings out of it a little bit, I think I have to give it a three.
Because I think that's a fair take.
I wouldn't not recommend it. It's just not for me.
I think it's a very specific recommendation, right? It's I could totally see a review that's like, this is a competent movie, and if it clicks with you in this very specific way, it's great. And if it doesn't click with you in this specific way, you're not going to like it at all. Like, I think if you don't relate to Rob, there's nothing to like about this movie. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, that's the whole movie, right? Is like Rob being a neurotic asshole and just and like hanging out with his friends and like just being an immature dickhead. And if you don't relate to him and thus don't find comedy in relating to him, then yeah, you're shit out of luck. Like, you know, it's not like there's a chase scene to fall back on, right? It's all just him, like Annie hauling to the camera. Right. So, God, there's another one. I'm going to give a four or five, and you guys are going to give ones. Someday.
Okay.
Not anytime soon. I get one of these a year.
No, you're fine.
Once a season, I get one of these.
And I'm definitely being harsh on it. Like, there are so many other movies that are way, way more poorly made and haphazard and everything. I think
we've watched some of them on this podcast.
I brought some.
let me when you're giving High Fidelity a one star, let me remind you, we did watch Black Sheep this year.
Yeah, that's true.
Did you watch Black Sheep with us?
I did. I don't think I was there. I think I watched it after.
That was like a movie so bad that I was like leaving my body as I was like watching it. I was like, let me escape from this mortal coil.
Like for me, like both of my boundaries of like what a great movie and what a bad movie are have been expanded by this podcast.
100%. Yeah.
Good Realm, we had House. Like, yeah. I would never have picked that movie off the shelf. And I'm so glad whoever picked it, because that's like one of my top five movies of all time now.
I love hearing you talk about House, Neil.
And then we had Return to Zombie Island, which is a movie that took amazing and intentionally made it worse.
God, that movie makes me angry.
So yeah, like
my standards for what a 1 are is have definitely changed.
Worse than Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey?
Dude, I think I'd have to give Blood and Honey like a really bad 2.
Damn.
Because at least it had an idea. It didn't do the well.
Yeah.
And it's an objectively terrible movie, but it didn't take something great and ruin it. Like, not that Winnie the Pooh is bad by himself, but like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I understand.
In another world with a more competent writer, a more competent director, that concept could have been funny, and they just didn't make it funny. And I'm shocked that it's getting a sequel.
Yeah,
I'm sure the sequel will be a 1, but the concept I think could have been like a great Bros in 40s movie, and it just.
Yeah, and Grace also watched that movie and said it was just total abject trash. So she watched it at like work one day or whatever. Which is surprising to me, seeing as it was some of the content I've heard about that. Anyway, the things you can get away with when you work in a dog salon, I guess. Okay.
I have some
Go ahead.
Bonus stuff I wanted to mention. Lisa Bonet, her daughter, I think, is Zoe Kravitz. Correct. If you want more High Fidelity, I don't know if you knew, Sam, there's a Hulu original.
Correct.
Starring her. Okay. So, was it fair if you saw that?
I have not seen that. I am not interested because it is not John Cusack and thus not me. So, mm-hmm. That gets rid of the, like I was just saying, that gets rid of the entire appeal of this this movie for me.
That's fair.
So can I give you guys like a little bit of lore about this movie? I would feel stupid if I didn't at least mention this, and Neil's going to roll his eyes because he knows what I'm going to say. I watched this movie. Like I said, I moved to Minnesota, had this movie with me, had not seen it yet, was like going on Tinder dates and stuff. Things weren't going good. Watched this movie. 2 weeks later, I met Grace.
Nice.
Like this movie made me see what I was doing wrong, right? And it showed me things about myself in a really powerful, funny way where I went, oh, and I kind of had like, I don't want to say an epiphany, but I kind of said like, oh, that's really interesting. I'd never seen it. I just, you know, I hadn't seen it put back to me in that particular way. And based on things that I tried to change about myself, I'm convinced that my relationship with Grace was ultimately successful because I saw this movie.
Nice.
So in the same way that John Cusack's character says that Let's Get It On is responsible. It's their song and it's responsible for their entire relationship. High Fidelity is responsible for like me growing up enough to be like ready to be with Grace.
Wow.
So that's my life lore on this movie. And that scene at the end, like when they're in the bar together, was like, I was like, that was it, man. Like that was all wow. I needed was that one little scene.
I'll be sure to ask Grace how she feels about that.
Oh yeah. Please do. I'm sure that's great. And then mention, then talk about Annie Hall with her. I'm sure she'd love to hear all about that too.
I mean, the other question, Gideon, or so Sam, which comes first, your birthday or Christmas?
Well, it kind of depends on what time of year. You mean from right now?
Yeah.
Birthday.
In October. Do you want to go halvesies on getting Sam an oversized black leather jacket?
Oh, how oversized? I got enough jackets, dude.
Yeah, some of them are oversized and baggy on you and look terrible.
Yeah, we'll give you a mop, a mop wig like he has in the beginning.
Sweet. Yeah. episode picture card. Just get Phil Hellmuth in his massively oversized black leather jacket.
And I think that was more of like the late 90s kind of thing.
No, I mean, it was, bring it back. But Phil Hellmuth is still doing it to this day. So.
Okay, awesome. Well, what's everybody got planned for tonight? I think we're about ready to wrap it up.
I'm not sure yet. Might watch a movie, might play more Elden Ring.
Mm-hmm.
I could mention I did see Maxine and I saw Long Legs.
Oh yeah, was Long Legs totally awesome?
I really, really liked it. Some people seem like they're kind of iffy on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I gave it like 4.5. It was kind of everything I wanted, except I wanted more. It almost felt like it could have been even better if it was almost like True Detective season one, like a nice mini series. I like the world.
Okay. Interesting. And Nick Cage was good in it.
Yeah, he was one of the best parts. Yeah,
he's always.
Yeah, it was good. It was cool. It was a well crafted horror movie. I liked it a lot.
I'm not saying anybody in here was a Nick Cage denier before, but I'm really proud of last November of like doing a whole Nick Cage month and red pilling everybody on Nick Cage being like a fantastic, fantastic actor.
I mean, I got Nick Cage November Mark II this year.
Oh,
you got one to bring?
I mean, I think we never got around to Face Off.
I've never seen Face Off.
I've also never seen it.
Okay, that would have to be on.
So I can hold out for that.
Awesome. Neil, what do you got going on tonight?
I'm just going to do a little bit of packing. Trying to spend a little more time with my mom, and then I'm heading up to the lake tomorrow morning.
Okay, sounds good, man. Yeah, I got to go into the office tomorrow. But then, I'm basically home free after that. I'm going to go put some Dead Space. I'm kind of trying to get that platinum trophy. Nice. Are you going to say good?
I could mention a few small things about Beau Is Afraid, just because it is 3 hours. And I would say probably don't be eating anything right at the beginning. The movie, it not like it's super gross, but let's say there's a lot going on right away.
Sorry, Astor movie,
Yeah, right from the get-go. But I'm just very curious to talk about it. I'm very excited to talk about it.
Okay.
I don't know. And I appreciate you bringing this one to the podcast and giving us your perspective and everything. And I still have fun,
Awesome. Well, I'm glad you guys don't want to beat me to death next time you see me based on this movie. I think I'm going to bring Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories up to the lake house and play that all weekend. Try to get through that. We'll see. It's the missing chapter for me on Kingdom Hearts. So.
Awesome.
Kingdom Hearts 2 has screwed us again.
All right. I'll see you guys. For Beau's Afraid for next week. Okay. That might be a little tricky seeing as that we're all going to be at the cabin all weekend, but we'll discuss things.
And we can push it if we need to. I want to make sure everyone has enough time to see it and everything.
Yeah,
sure. I'm actually going to tell you guys to try and push Xander to commit to doing Tangled next week because I will be at a work event on Wednesday next week.
Okay, I'll try to get Xander.
Cool. All right.
I'll see you guys
later, guys. Have a good one.